Hello, everyone. This is Tandy Elisala, your Chief Inspiration Officer with Center for Inspiring Greatness. And I am so excited to have my friend and colleague here today, Debbie Takara Shalor. She is a best-selling author, an award-winning speaker, an engineer, and consultant. Takara has helped thousands of readers, clients, and customers from across the globe discover and become the beautiful, powerful, magnificent being they are inside while achieving a level of calmness, clarity, and divine connection rarely thought possible. She helps people discover their unique magnificence, regain their confidence, and heal from the past in order to experience greater health, happiness, success, and a sense of fulfillment. While recovering from a truly life-changing traumatic experience, Takara felt left the security of a high-paying engineering management career, moved to an island, and started a nonprofit for dolphins and whales. Takara took deep dives into personal empowerment, spiritual growth, energy healing, and how life really works. She began teaching others how to apply real-world savvy with spiritual finesse, making life easier, significantly less stressful, much more fun and meaningful. And I strongly encourage you to go check out more, learn more about her, and get her complimentary 7 Secrets ebook at magnificentu.com/gift/. So that's magnificent, and then the letter U.com/gift. Welcome, Takara.
Welcome. Hey, so great to talk to you.
Oh my gosh, it's so great to talk to you too. I always love our conversations. And today we're talking about limiting beliefs. So in your teachings, you mentioned that people are here to achieve 4 states. It's what you call the noble seas. Can you talk to us, explain those to our listeners and tell us a little bit more?
Absolutely. So when I was trying to figure out the best way to explain to people, you know, as they're growing and evolving personally and spiritually, you know, what is the goal? What are they aiming for? I came up with these, every word I came up with started with a C, and so I started calling them the noble C's. And the words are calm, clear, confident, and divinely connected. So to be calm is to be centered and at peace and in balance and harmony, no matter what's going on around you or in your life. To be clear means that the decisions that you make and the way that you respond to the world versus react to it is coming from a place of complete clarity of mind. And that happens especially, you know, when we're talking about limiting beliefs. It happens really well if you've healed a lot of your limiting beliefs, if you've overcome them and let them go and have faced them and released them. That leads to significantly more mental clarity. Confident is about knowing who you are, being sure of your gifts, of your talents, of your worth. And so with this confidence, you can go out into the world and create the relationships that you want, or travel, or, you know, do whatever it is that your heart desires, these goals and dreams and aspirations that you have for yourself. You have the confidence to go take the actions necessary to make them happen. And finally, being divinely connected means that not only are you living in a third dimensional experience, but that you also are constantly in this connection with divinity where you're receiving these intuitive promptings that sort of help guide you. And so you know when you're in alignment with divine will, and when you're out and things are all chaotic, you know that you're not in alignment. So that divine connection is really important.
I love that, Takara, because to be calm, to be clear, to be confident, and to be divinely connected is the secret sauce, in my opinion, to, you know, really, to living our lives full out and to standing in our light and to to not allowing any limiting beliefs to get in the way, because when you are these four things and you truly embody them, everything just flows.
Absolutely. Wholeheartedly agree with you.
Yeah. So you say that there are nine things that stand in the way of achieving these noble C's, the calmness, the clarity, the confidence, and the divine connectedness. What are these nine things that stand in our way?
Okay. So there's sometimes things outside of you, but what I'm talking about, these nine things that I'm going to list here, are the things that are within us. Each of us have all of these to some degree, unless we've done a ton of personal work. But the nine things are fear, limiting beliefs, judgments, expectations, attachments to outcomes, guilt, shame, blame, and victimhood.
Wow. So I just want to go over that again. So it's fear. It's
fear.
Belief.
Yep.
Judgment. Expectations of others.
Right.
Or from others. Attachment.
Or of ourselves. Both of those. Judgments and expectations are of both yourself and other people.
Yes. Attachment. Guilt. Shame. Blame. And victimhood.
Right.
Love that. I mean, it's sad, but it's good. Right.
So. Right. Well, this is where the work is, right? Because, you know, I've been working on this stuff for, well, most of my life, but really consciously for over 20 years. And, you know, I'm a deep, deep meditator. I meditate every single day and have for the past 20 years. And I ask really meaningful questions, things that I want the answers to. And so I'm like, okay, what are the things standing in our way? And mostly when I first started asking these sorts of questions, I was mostly asking, what's standing in the way of people being happy? You know, why isn't their life feeling fulfilled? Why aren't they happy? Why aren't they enjoying life? And so that's when this list started coming together. And the more I've looked at the list and the more I've looked at, you know, outside at situations and people, you know, it always comes back to this list. You know, if these things were not there, there is happiness.
Yes.
You know, whether it's fear, I mean, you know, all of them apply at in various circumstances, you know. And they're just, this is where all the work is, right here. This list right here, this is where we do every bit of work we do on ourselves. It's around these things.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. So, Kara, here's the million-dollar question. Where do these nine limiting beliefs come from?
Where do we get them all?
Yeah.
Okay, so I've got several different places that we get them. The first one is we were taught them, okay? We grew up with them in our family, in our religion. We got them at school. Our peers thought this way. So, you know, certain fears that we have, we're taught from as little children at home, you know, these people are bad or always be careful, this could happen to you. And it's reinforced over and over and over. If the people around us have these same beliefs, we tend to take them on. That's one of the places that we get them, is that we learn them or they're taught to us.
Yes.
The second place that they come from is that we inherit them literally through our DNA. And this is now scientifically proven. They've now shown that phobias, et cetera, literally are passed down generation to generation. And
wow.
What that means, I mean, I get chills even talking about it, because what that means is if back in your ancestry, you know, they went through the dark ages and they were starving to death, or maybe they were tortured or, you know, beheaded or whatever went on. And the dark ages is just one place. I mean, you know, there's been war and there's been famine and there's been, you know, the Black Plague and there's been all this stuff that happened in history. And your family, it carries through in the DNA from generation to generation. So, I mean, this is some really big stuff. So you can be afraid of, say you have this weird fear of falling, or you have a weird fear of water, or you have a weird fear of spiders. Well, it may not even be your fear. It may have been that some really awful thing happened, you know, three generations back, and you have no way of ever getting that information. You know what I mean? Like, you can't talk to those people aren't around anymore to say, you know, was there something strange that happened in the family, you know? It's really tough to have those conversations with people that aren't here anymore. So some of the things that we carry and run in our mind subconsciously and consciously were passed down to us, and those are tricky. I mean, you can deal with them, but, you know, it takes some work. The third place they come from is your own life experiences and traumas that you've experienced. So especially when you're younger, you know, when you're a kid or you're a high school student or even in the early years of working, if you have a really stressful experience that happens, you know, say your first boss was a narcissist, or your first romantic experience, you know, you were just left devastated, your heart was broken or whatever. Those personal experiences that we have, we take on fears, we take on beliefs about how life is, tainted through that view of we were hurt once. And so it makes us not be fully present and open and even able to see clearly the people and situations in front of us, because we have all this skewed view or this tainted baggage from the past that is our actual own experiences, where we made up stuff about what that means in order to cope with the situation. And then finally, Well, I mean, it's, you know, these are how these things work. The final thing as a potential is your own experiences in, say, a past life. Mm-hmm. That's one other option. So when we do work on these things, we tend to look for possibly things that were inherited through DNA. And we really, the easiest things to address, the ones that are usually, say, if you go to a psychologist and they try to help you deal with these things, you're mostly working with the things that happen in your own life, the things that happen in childhood, the things that growing up with your mom or your dad or your siblings or Uncle Joe or, like, whoever, things that happen when you're in school, if you were, you know, never picked for the football team, or, you know, all these little things that really hurt our feelings and make us feel insecure, feel, you know, if we have a parent that says to us or calls us stupid or anything derogatory like that, anybody that we look up to that belittles us, or even in jest, even, you know, my own father used to make fun of me all the time. To him it was funny. To me it was really hurtful. So it depends on how sensitive you are, you know, and everyone is different. But those are the easiest ones to address because, you know, we can easily figure out where they came from.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, these four, that we're either taught them, we inherit them through our DNA, it's through our life experiences and traumas, or our past lives.
Mm-hmm.
So how can somebody overcome these limiting beliefs?
Well, I find that to truly heal anything, whether it's a physical issue, whether it's a fear or a limiting belief like we're talking about in this interview, or if it's something else, like, you know, why we don't have why we constantly have issues with money, or we don't have a great relationship or whatever, every issue we face, I find, has a physical component, a mental emotional component, and a spiritual energetic component. And if you address it from all of those, whether you do it simultaneously or just at different times, but you're still addressing the same issue, you actually can heal and eliminate most of it, especially with mental, emotional things. So I just, you know, put down, knowing that we were going to have this interview, I just jotted down a whole bunch of different things that people use, because there's lots of different things you can do. But the bottom line is, you want to get, if you have a phobia, if you have a limiting belief, sometimes it's in your conscious mind. That's things that you're aware of. And sometimes it's in your subconscious mind. That means it's buried in there deeply, but you're not that aware of it. The things that you're aware of are the easiest ones to deal with, and those can be, I mean, almost talked through. You know, like you go to a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and you, or a good friend, or like, you know, it depends on the level and severity of, say you've gone through a major trauma, you definitely need help, right, from a professional. But if it's just something minuscule and you just, it's still bothering you, sometimes just talking it through with a friend or even journaling about it, if you allow yourself to go through all the stages of healing, which I can talk to you in a minute if you want about what those are, but you can kind of do a lot of work on your own if it's things that you're aware of. When something is in subconscious that you're not aware of, but that still causes you to make decisions a certain way or react to situations hugely, even though the situations seem minor, you might have had a whole explosion of anger or sadness or felt completely betrayed by something that other people look at and think is trivial. That's usually because you have a subconscious thing going on that you're not aware of. So to get to those things, you have to do something deeper than just talk about it. You have to go deeper, and you can go deeper with hypnotherapy. You can go deeper with certain forms of meditation. I really recommend people do something to force their brain into theta. When I say force, I mean listen to proper music, or, you know, it's not overcoming your own free will or anything. It's just there's ways to gently induce, even with a drum beat, you can put yourself into different brain waves, right? So there's, you know, shamanic practitioners that do things with drums or rattles, and then they've been trained in how to help you access information, deep meditations that get you out of conscious mind that you're normally in if you're talking to someone or you're watching television or these normal, very active brain waves. If you can go deeper, then you can usually access things. Some people prefer ways that address the body more, where they are trying to get to cellular memory. That's especially helpful if a person's been through trauma. So those people will go and have massage, or they'll have deep tissue massage in particular, because I personally don't like deep tissue massage. It's not my way at all. I don't like pain. But for some people, going right in there and touching the place that's holding all that pain, when you work with it, it actually releases. You know, so that's another way to do that. There's also Tai Chi and trance dance and all these ways of moving the body in ways you don't normally. It unlocks something in your psyche. So it can be fun. It can be a dance. It can be movement. It can be easy and playful. And then all of a sudden you do something and suddenly you're just in tears. People that study, you know, yoga and really go into that and hold poses for a long time and do that sort of thing, I've heard of miraculous things happening when you really pursue it from that perspective. You unlock the cellular memory. And when the tears are flowing, you don't always have to cry in order to heal something, but if there are tears flowing, it's usually because something is releasing.
Yes, yes. Yes, exactly, exactly. Oh, I love that. So we talked about some things that people do on an emotional level, on a physical level. Are there any other areas, even mental or spiritual?
Well, I mean, some of the things that I do with people is, you know, I've studied shamanism for a long time, and I also seem to have some weird gift to just, you know, if I'm on the phone with somebody, and I'm not the only one that can do this, I'm just saying, you know, this is sort of kind of how I work with people. You know, I have oils and energies, so people who go to like a Reiki practitioner or a hands-on healer or someone that works with crystals, or somehow you want to get energy in there.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, there's all kinds of energy tools. And so you find an energy tool that feels good to you or that you want to explore. And So you've got someone working with you with these energy tools. And then in that state of this higher vibration or different vibration that's very harmonizing and balancing with a crystal or an oil or whatever it is, someone walking you through a guided meditation or doing some sort of shamanic journey, suddenly memories just spontaneously show up.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can access the memory and you're already working with vibration, it's like it lifts it out. And you can cry, you can get angry. There's, you know, emotions tend to surface with the memory. But you just, you know, it's, you breathe through it and it's really simple. And so shamanism is a great, I mean, I really like that. I mean, it's not kind of really what I call it, I do, but there's a lot of wonderful shamanic healers out there, you know,
yes.
And they do great work. But any kind of, that's, you know, I think there's a million different ways. And as we grow and evolve personally, in one part of our life, in one, you know, time frame in our life, we might feel very, very drawn to go to a Reiki practitioner. And maybe that's because what we're facing in the moment, that person or that methodology is exactly what we need right then. But when we're facing another thing at a different time, a completely other thing might be in order. You know, then it might be do the deep tissue massage or take a trance dance course. Or maybe it's to go to a shamanic practitioner and really do some deeper, more things that are more connected to nature. So I think it just depends. And for me, I like the exploration. I like to explore them all and follow my intuition is my guide always. You know, I'll just, I'll follow my intuition on where it feels appropriate to get support right now.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I love that. And I talk about that, you know, all the time about us connecting, you know, with our intuition and listening to our internal guidance system.
Right.
So if somebody, you know, has a fear, limiting belief, a judgment, an expectation, attachment, guilt, shame, blame, or victimhood, and they have tried the, you know, various emotional and physical ways of going deeper and healing and becoming aware, and they're still experiencing challenges, is it safe to say that it could be, you know, an inherited thing through the DNA or a past life that they just aren't able to,
that they can't,
they aren't
access.
Aware of? Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of things we're not aware of. And so, I mean, those are potentials. And the thing is, I mean, for me, and this is just what I always recommend for people, it's like whatever you know how to do, then you do it. You know, if you know how to dance, then dance. If you know how to journal, then journal. I mean, and anybody can do either of those two things I just said, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, but you can learn other ways to move. Like you can take a class in Tai Chi or you can do yoga, and that gets you to a different place. But if you've already done a whole lot of things and you don't have an answer, or the phobia or the pattern is still running, I call it a pattern, where a circumstance shows up and you go through the same set of emotions every bloody time, like your heart is broken again, or you go into overwhelm again, or this thing falls apart again, you know, that is a pattern to me. And so when a pattern is running that you just have tried a lot of things and it's not been successful, you know, I always recommend that you start trying to find a person to help you, you know, like a one-on-one session with somebody who's very intuitive and very connected and very clear. And, you know, because there's no cookie cutter answer for anybody.
Yeah.
You know, what works for this person may not work at all for this other person. And so I tend to personally like to recommend and go myself to people who are really spontaneous in the moment and just can communicate and be present with the person and can make suggestions for them. And, you know, some of the best work from my own experience with me, all the tools that I have, I still on occasion need help with something. You know, I find people that can help you with a regression of some kind, whether it's, hypnotherapy or done kind of in a more shamanic way, along with some sort of energy healing where they actually like touch your shoulder or they're running energy.
Because
sometimes touching you, even just on the shoulder, if they're running energy, it shifts something, you know.
Yeah.
And having that person there holding space, I remember, gosh, this is just suddenly popping in my head, years and years and years ago, I was reading a book by Barbara Hanclow, and then I ended up in Seattle at an expo, and she was there and did a three-hour class, and so I ended up taking this class with her. And in there, she was describing that a practitioner, someone who does body work or somebody who does energy work or somebody that works one-on-one with people where they're kind of having a session, if you will, that their real job, that facilitator's real job, is to hold the space so the person's own higher self and guides, angels, whoever, can come in and do the work. Like you're opening up the veils and holding the space sacred and protected and safe for the real work to be done. And you're there as a facilitator. So, you know, that's kind of what's happening in those moments. And so the trick is to try to find those that you feel good about and that you feel safe with and that seem to understand who you are.
Chikara, I love that. That is such a beautiful explanation, a beautiful way to describe, you know, the facilitator and what their role is. And, that's just really powerful. That's just a really powerful way of saying it. It's just, wow.
Well, I mean, she was very clear about it, and it really meant something to me at the time. And it popped in when you started talking about that. So I was like, okay, this is the answer.
right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, you listed the 9 things that can hold us back and stand in the way of us achieving calmness, clarity, confidence, and divine connection. Of those 9 things, are there, with all the, you know, the people that you work with, is there one or two of those things that are tend to be more prevalent for people?
Okay. I'm looking at the list because I always write the list down to make sure I'm not skipping one. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I say there's 9, so there better be 9. I actually believe we all run all of them. Okay, and so depending on the situation we're facing, we may have one more prevalent than another in any given moment. But the one right away that I find causes the greatest level of unhappiness in the moment is attachments to outcomes or expectations, which are kind of similar or work in tandem. So if your expectation is that a person is going to behave a certain way and they don't, instantly you're upset with them.
Yes.
Okay, and the more strongly you hold those expectations and what I call the attachments to outcomes, meaning, you know, you asked for help, but it didn't go the way you wanted. When things don't go the way you planned, people get way bent out of shape, you know?
Yes.
Like, you can tell a lot about a person and where they are with the calm, clear, confident, and connected thing. You can tell a lot about a person and how much work they've done or how much work there is to do right now by how they handle unexpected situations, like a flat tire, like the car is a really good example. If something goes wrong with the car, especially if they have to be somewhere really like right now, how they handle that situation lets them know and you know where they are. Because if you react really strongly, it means you have an attachment that it's like this and you have expectations that this moment was going to flow easily and it didn't, and you're going to throw a little immature tantrum. Do you know what I mean? Like you get angry, you get sad, you throw fits. And that's normal. I'm not saying that's not normal, but it means that when people have those strong reactions, it means that there's work to do in those areas. So working on that stuff, people who meditate, especially do deep meditations, this stuff falls away almost instantly. I mean, almost instantly you give up your attachment to the outcome. And as soon as the car breaks down, instead of freaking out, they are like, okay, now what? You know, meditation does that for you.
Yes.
And so that's a really quick fix to assist in happiness. Okay, so that's how I look at that one. I'm looking at the other ones. I mean, we all have limiting beliefs, every single one of us, because if we didn't, we would be healthy. We would have an amazing relationship with a romantic partner if that's what we want. We would have an outstanding career. We would have no money issues. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If we had no limiting beliefs, we would have everything our heart desires. Now, sometimes that's time. Okay, sometimes we need to go through certain things and have certain experiences and meet certain people before we're supposed to go off and do this other thing. You know, I believe that our whole life, in tandem or in communication or in communion with our higher self, the soul has a plan. I believe the soul has a plan, and so all this stuff goes along. But I think we're here learning how to get over these limiting beliefs so that we can step into our true magnificence and live the life we want and help other people. I mean, I kind of think that once we've achieved what we're here to achieve personally, we're supposed to turn around and grab somebody else's hand and help them.
Yes, yes, absolutely, Takara, absolutely. Wow, this has been phenomenal. Like, mic drop phenomenal. Love it. I love it. I love it, I love it, I love it.
Great.
And I agree with you. I think that, you know, our attachments to outcomes, our expectations is really does. It really is a common thing. And, you know, I like to say that, you know, our job is to look at the what and make sure we're doing the what and, you know, not worry about the how, which is the attachment.
Right.
You know, the how
right.
is this going to happen? How is this going to work? You know, if you get a flat tire, you know, how is this? You know, how are we going to get wherever, blah, 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 blah. But you're so right that you can really tell a lot about a person and where they're at in their life with mm-hmm. by they how we react to something like that.
Right,
it's,
right.
You know,
if a
yeah.
person has undealt with anger, you know, if they come across as really calm and cool and collected, but in moments like that, if they get really, really angry,
mm-hmm.
that just means that there's a whole lot of anger in there and they're doing a really good job of covering it up.
Yeah.
But that there's a lot of anger issues that they might want to look at. You know, it's not our job to fix other people. It's our job to look at ourselves. But we
yes.
have to be careful who we hang out with because it does influence us, you know.
Yes.
You said something about attachment to outcome, something that you just mentioned, and, like, I'm not remembering exactly what you said, but it made me think about the biggest expectations I think that we have are of how other people are supposed to treat us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see this a lot in relationships, particularly people that have a lot of anger stuff. They get so angry because this person said a certain thing, did a certain thing, like they really get bent out of shape. And it's because they have unrealistic expectations of other people and usually of themselves. But it also means that they're running a lot of fear. You know, usually the need for somebody to be a certain way is usually fueled by fear.
Mm-hmm.
So they all kind
yes.
of play around together. It's like a little dance.
Absolutely. You know, Takara, it's interesting. I was actually just interviewing somebody else for another project, and through his discussion with me about love over fear, choosing love,
right?
And you just said something about relationships, and it made me think about this, that I got a huge aha today from that interview, that my failed second marriage, the thing that was like the beginning of the end was my expectation and need for how my then husband was going to support me through my first cancer diagnosis.
Right.
And he wasn't there for me. And
right.
And I realized today, which is really interesting, of all the work that I've done, right, I realized today that, wow, even if he would have been there, I wasn't in a space to receive.
Right.
And I wasn't operating at that vibrational level of love. And my friend Rick reminded me that, you know, he said, well, what do you think he was thinking when you worked out the diagnosis? And I said, well, he was probably afraid. And,
absolutely.
You know, and so that whole fear, you know, really reared its ugly head. But I had an expectation of how
right.
he was going to be there and how he was going to support me. And
right.
and that expectation failed miserably. Like, it just didn't
right.
happen. And
right. but here's,
it was really tough.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. But here's the thing. In a moment like that, you know, you had the diagnosis, but the diagnosis affected both of you. It
yes.
was traumatic for both of you. And you each had a journey to go through in dealing with the diagnosis. You know, it was any time you have people with you, whether it's a child or a spouse or, you know, a dear friend or any of that, when they're going through something traumatic and you're tied into them emotionally and because you love them and you have compassion and because they mean a lot to you, you're going through trauma as well. You know, and everybody, these traumatic moments, I call them the metaphysical 2x4 upside the head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these moments wake us up and make us face our deepest fears. And, you know, I mean, when the C word shows up, not my noble C's, but that other C that you were mentioning, the
yeah,
cancer word,
yeah.
I mean, that brings up like almost primal fear. You know,
mm-hmm.
people are terrified of that C word. And for good reason, you know. I mean, there's tons of ways to deal with it now, and there's all kinds of great stuff. But still, we know too many people that have not made it through when the C word showed up. So
right.
it brings up huge, huge fear for the person with the diagnosis and everyone around them. And not only are they afraid for the person, but then they wonder about their own mortality. You know, I mean, it just
right.
really, really brings up some stuff. And everybody has to handle trauma the best they can in their own way. And
yes.
and so it's, you know, I've seen all kinds of situations where people have been diagnosed with untreatable or incurable cancer, you know, where they literally have been given the short, you know, you've only got this long. And they come to peace with it, which is really interesting. Like, at first, of course, they're not, and they're shocked, and they go through all the stages of mourning and all that. But, you know, eventually they tend to come to peace with it, and they actually have to take care of everybody else because the other people are not handling it well at all.
Right.
It's a very interesting phenomena.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It really is. It really is. That was just such a huge, you know, a huge aha, and
absolutely, yeah.
You know, the expectations that we have of other people is, I agree.
Right.
It's, and I think, you know, to what degree do you think, like, society and our culture has contributed to that?
Well, I think, like I said, you know, I think there's these four reasons that we have all of these, and I think that certain ones that you run.
Yeah.
Either came from your parents, like, how would I put this? Expectations you have of other people, to me, is very on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not
mm-hmm.
so deep. That's like you know what you expect of them, right? Like,
right.
it's not hidden.
Right.
You are very clear. This is what you needed them to do or you expected them to do, and they have fallen very, very short, you know? So
yeah.
so we are completely aware, consciously, of what we need from other people or desire from other people. And
mm-hmm.
we tend to, as a species, get very upset with others if they don't live up to those expectations. And I think because it's so on the surface and conscious, that it probably came from childhood, you know, the way we were reared, the expectations that our parents, like we were expected to do this in certain circumstances. I think we got our marching orders as young people, and we turn around and have those expectations of others, you know? Like, you know, it's the difference between, you know, if I was flying in to visit my family, my parents would be early to the airport, and they would be waiting on me. Because that's how they would, that's how they behave. So, of course, that's the same thing I do. If somebody's coming to fly to me, you know, I'm there at the airport early, and I'm, you know, I'm a complete hostess the whole time they're visiting me. I'm taking them places. I'm doing things. I'm like, you know, my whole life gets put on hold because I have guests, because that's the way I was raised. But, you know, I had a roommate once who was flying home, and, like, she sat in an airport for, like, an hour and a half because her parents didn't even bother until she called from the airport saying, I'm here. I couldn't even imagine. But that's how, but, you know, that's just a simple, simple example of how easy it is to have expectations that other people, that's just not how they operate, you know?
Right.
So I think a lot of it is stuff that we saw other people do, and that the, these were the expectations of us as we were to behave under certain circumstances. I think we learned them as children, probably, like you said, in the society and growing up. I think that we have definitely put in expectations of those around us because of
our how we were raised.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I love it. Oh, this has just been such a great, great conversation, Takara, and I know everybody's just been writing this stuff down and really having, like, lots of ahas. So are there any questions about limiting beliefs that I didn't ask that you wish I would have, or anything that you haven't shared that you'd like to share now?
There is something I'd like to share, and I'm trying to write it down really fast so I make sure that I don't forget it all. But that is, you know, I touched briefly on the stages of mourning. I touched briefly on going through all the stages that you go through to really heal something. And I thought I would just go through what those stages are real quickly so people know what I'm talking about.
Okay. You bet.
Okay, because it's some of the anger and some of the sadness that people have are because they're stuck in a stage of mourning. All right, so when I talk about mourning, what I'm talking about is the sadness one feels, the process of great loss, you know, loss of health, loss of a spouse, loss of love, loss of a job, loss of money, loss of youth, like whatever it is, usually it's a traumatic single moment where someone died or we lost our job or our spouse cheated or whatever these moments are, but they're huge. And they can happen when we're little kids, and the events that cause them when we're small may be much less traumatic or seemingly big, but to the little kid it was a big thing. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like you're seeing it with different eyes. And so we go through these stages of mourning, and you have to go through all of them before it's truly healed and released. And so some of these getting rid of limiting beliefs and these fears and these trauma things that we are talking about, sometimes you have to go through all the stages of mourning. And one of the great things, ways to do it is one of the tools I suggested earlier, which was journaling. It's just to write about it. Okay. But if I take an example and I would say, okay, suddenly someone lost their spouse, like suddenly there was an accident and their spouse is dead now. You know, yesterday they were happily married and they had their whole life in front of them with this person, and today the person's gone.
Yeah.
There's a series of stages of healing that a person goes through. And one of those stages is denial. And denial says that you feel nothing. You know what happened, but you just can't process it. And so a person could lose their spouse and show up at work the next day. And everybody looks at them like, what on earth is wrong with you, you know? But it's because the emotions are so big, they can't face them yet, and so they just close the door. You know, I mean, with my own experience of rape, it was 15 years before I got out of the denial stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we close those doors because we're not ready to handle it, okay? So denial is one of the phases. So we may or may not even remember that it happened, but we've not felt any emotion about it. We've not been any of the feelings. Okay, another stage is to get really angry. So the spouse is gone and you're mad. You're mad at the world. Why me? Why now? Why him? This isn't fair, and there's anger, and I mean, you just are just angry at the world. And sometimes when you meet older people that are just angry all the time, sometimes it's because they're stuck in anger over something that they didn't heal all the way. You know, this thing could have happened when they were 20 years old, and now they're in their 60s, and they're still angry at everything. They didn't have the tools, and it's really sad, you know. Then there's sadness. And sadness is, you know, severe depression, crying, hopelessness, all those things that people feel when they've lost something that's dear to them, whether it's their own health or money or a spouse or whatever. There is a time when there is deep, deep sadness, and that may or may not be why you young people commit suicide, but it could be. Do you know what I mean? Like there's this sadness phase that people go through. And then there's a phase called bargaining. And bargaining is the best way to describe it is there's a belief inside that says, if this happens, my life will be okay. If only this happens, my life will be totally okay again. So if only I lose 10 pounds, if only I buy this new dress, if only I take this fancy trip, if only I get a new boyfriend, my life will be completely okay.
Right.
And bargaining, people get stuck in bargaining. I kind of think that's where hoarding comes from. Because in the second that you buy the thing, there's joy. And there's this brief reprieve from whatever these emotions are that you're not processing. But then, you know, then you have to go buy something else because it's a very short-lived feeling. So when I used to go, like when I used to have major breakups with people that I'd been with for 3 or 4 years, I literally would go out and buy a new car.
Wow.
I mean, that's, you know, luckily I had the money to do that at the time, but I mean, that's fairly dramatic. You know? So like if I only have this new thing, this shiny new thing, my life will be okay. It's just a stage of mourning. And it's because we're trying to shift the energy and we want some newness in our life. And there's really nothing wrong with that, actually.
Yeah.
As long as it's not out of balance.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And then finally, when we've gone through all of those stages, we reach acceptance. And that means it's all healed. So the four before, you know, the denial, anger, sadness, and bargaining, those can happen in any order at all. There's no order to those four, but then the fifth one, you can only reach acceptance when you've gone through those others.
Yes, yes. I really appreciate you sharing that, Takara, because, you know, there may be, obviously, there is someone listening to this that needed to hear that, and that the healing was or is impacting, you know, one of those nine things that stand in our way. And so I appreciate you sharing that because that feeds right in to what we're talking about. Absolutely.
You're very welcome.
Absolutely. Are there any other tidbits or anything else that you wish I would have asked?
I don't think so, actually.
Oh,
it feels complete to me. I mean, I gave you some lists, and I gave you a bunch of tools, and I explained the mourning process, and all of that feels like lots of great food for thought.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely it does. Thank you so much, so much, Takara, for being with us and sharing your heart and your wisdom with us. And I really encourage everyone to go check out Takara's complimentary 7 Secrets ebook at magnificent.com/gift. So thank you so much. And until next time, everyone, have a fabulous, fabulous day.